21st of December 2018. Yud Dalet Tavis. Oh, here we go. Yud Dalet Tavis, Tavshin. No, Yud Gimel Tavis, Tavshin Ayin Tes. And we are the last day of Parsha Spaluska, which is the last parak, parak Yud Beis. And of course, a major emphasis over the course of the parak has to do with the complaints about Miriam and Aaron against Moshe, and the reaction really of Hashem. Moshe doesn't actually, well, other than the tefillah that he says on behalf of Miriam towards the end of the parsha, Moshe doesn't really say anything. Doesn't say anything over the course of the parak. It's really Moshe, Miriam, Aaron, and Hashem. So Miriam and Aaron say whatever they say about Moshe, and then the pasuk makes it, and Hashem heard it, and the pasuk makes a comment of Aish Moshe Anav Ma'od Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Adama. That Moshe was a very humble person. So when you read over that, it seemed, as we talked about this the other day, it seemed like it's like a narrator speaking. Like, by the way, in case you didn't know, Moshe had this extreme sense of humility. And then we get into this discussion about Hashem calls Aaron and Miriam in and starts dealing with them. But what is the right? And what does he tell them? What does Hashem tell them? That Moshe is not like you. Pel pel davar, but I speak to him face to face. Right? I speak to him face to face, and therefore he's different than you. So what? Right? It's still, meaning, how does that answer? How does that resolve the how does that resolve the questions that Miriam and Aaron had? Miriam and Aaron said, you know, he divorced his wife because he's a Navi. We're also Navim. Maybe we should also get divorced. To which Hashem responds, no, he's a different type of Navi. But it's still a good argument, right? The reason why Moshe can't stay with his wife is because of his prophecy. But Hashem could come to them at any moment. Well, they're also Nevi'im. Hashem could come to them at any moment also. What is the distinction? What is the fact that Moshe might be distinct from them? What does that have to do with their complaint or their question? Yeah?
Hashem doesn't speak to them face-to-face. So he comes to them in a dream or in a vision, right?
Yeah, but I think it could still happen during the day. I think that was that's their issue. It could still happen.
But they wouldn't have to leave their wife, their spouse. It's not interfering with, if they're in a trance or in a something, they're not with their spouse anyway.
Is that true? I mean, Hashem came to them now. They're in the middle of this. That's what the Mefarshim said, that they're in the middle of doing those, and that's when Hashem came to them to show them what the issue is.
Okay.
So where are we? Yeah. So the Rav Soloveitchik has a piece here, right, where he seems to be explaining that, well, they did recognize that he was greater. The entire time they recognized he was greater, they didn't recognize the actual difference. Now, right, Sam's question then comes back into the floor. Like, okay, so then what is that then? So Rav Soloveitchik continues on and says, well, he points out an interesting thing, that when Moshe left, that what was the distinction between them, that when, or what was the cause of the distinction between them, that when Moshe left, in Sefer Devarim, when Miriam, there is a command there, the only time that we come back to this is Zachor, remember what happened to Miriam as you were leaving, when she spoke badly against Moshe, who took them out of Egypt, Zachor, Sasher, Asashem, L'chalcha, Miriam, B'tzerech, B'tzeischem, Mimitzrayim, on the way when you left Egypt. Well, what happened to Miriam when they left Egypt? We don't know of anything that happened when they left Egypt. We know of what happened there now. I mean, that's referring to the end of Parshas Va'aloscha. So why is it referred to in that odd way of B'derech B'tzeischem Mitzrayim, on the way from when you were leaving Egypt? What is this? So his suggestion is, Rav Soloveitchik says, why was it necessary to say that? Because apparently the Torah tries to impress upon us that the whole Exodus would not have occurred if Moshe had not been the only one, the prophet and the leader, beyond the reach of imagination. Moshe had not been different, totally other, the strangest of all, Inimitable and unmatched, Yetzias Mitzrayim would not have taken place. Why? No other prophet would have brought about this great miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Only Moshe, because of Moshe was singular, because Moshe had the element of segula. What does that mean, that he had the element of segula? So there's a little bit of a challenge on that. What does that mean, that Moshe was distinct, Moshe was different? So I'm not sure I was able to zero in on what Rosh Salvation was saying as to what that distinct difference is, but perhaps the answer does come from that possible. Perhaps the answer, you can plug in some of the discussion that Rabbi Simon has here in the Sefer Imrei Baruch with regards to that pasuk of Vayish Moshe Anav Mo'od, that Moshe was very unique, Mikol Adam Asher Pnei Adama, that from all the people that were on the land. What is the characteristic of Anivus? What is the characteristic of humility? What does that have to do with this discussion about Moshe's prophecy? Why is it that a person, what is special about the idea of Anivus? So we've probably discussed in the past, you've all probably heard, that in order to be humble, in order for a person to be, they have to recognize who they are. Humility is not imagining that a person is nothing, it is imagining that a person is something, realizing what they are, and yet realizing that Keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that person is considered, is nothing compared to what Hashem, in comparison to Hashem. So he has here an interesting piece from Rav Elisha Chaim Horvitz Shlita. I don't know who that is. Where he points out the following extra word in the Masoras Hashas. The Masoras Hashas. Where's the Masoras Hashas? Anybody know where would I want to find the Masoras Hashas? Usually not much to find there. Well, there is. It's helpful, but you don't usually find any drush ideas in there. The Masoras Hashas is the line on the side of the Gemara, on the outside margin of the Gemara, where it points you to where this Gemara is quoted in other places in Shas. So it cross-references different Gemaras. Masoras Hashas is the same person that wrote the E-Mitzvah, E-Mishpat Nir Mitzvah, as well as the, I think it's called the Torah Or. The E-Mishpat Nir is on the side where it cross-references you to, did he write that? I think he might have. I'm not sure about that, but certainly the Torah Or on the side margins of the Gemara, where it quotes which psukim, is written by the same person. Forgetting his name, I believe he lived in Italy. I'm not sure, but anyways, there is a Gemara in Maseches Nedarim where it says, "Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mashvish Shechina Ela Al Gibor VaAsher VaChacham VaAnav." That Hakadosh Baruch Hu does not allow the Shechina to dwell except for somebody who is a Gibor, who is strong, Asher, wealthy, Chacham, wise, and Anav, and a person who is humble. Right? Those four things. There's a little bit of a dispute amongst the Rishonim as to whether one understands those as physical characteristics or all of them are emotional character characteristics. You know, what does Gibor mean? Gibor mean emotionally strong? It doesn't mean strong, physically strong. That's a bit of a question. But anyways, that's what the Gemara tells the Maseches Nedarim, right? So Anav is a prerequisite for, and all of them are learned to have from Moshe. The Gemara goes on and says, and quotes Yipsukim to tell you how Moshe was all of these things. Gibor, Asher, Chacham, and Anav. But then he says, Ayin Shabbos Tzadi Beis, in the Masoras Hashas on side, says, take a look in Shabbos Tzadi Beis Amid Aleph, U'mitzvah Liyashiv. He has in those two words. It's a mitzvah to answer up the question. What's the question? You don't know what the question is. It's just a mitzvah to answer. You've got to look up the Gemara and figure out what it is. So if you look up the Gemara there, it's clearly referring to the following Gemara. Where the Gemara says, "In Ashkina Shora," that the Shekhinah does not dwell, "Ella Al," same thing, "Chacham Gibor Asher, Uval Koma." Balkoma, a wise person, a strong person, a wealthy person, and a Balkoma. What is a Balkoma? Sounds like it's a tall person. That's literally what the word means. A tall person. Balkoma, somebody of stature. But what seems to be going on here, it seems to be replacing the word Anav with the word Balkoma. Somebody of height. Somebody of stature. And the truth is the Masoras Hashas in Shabbos says the same thing. He says, look up in the Darim. Look at that Gemara in the Darim. It's really Yashiv. It's a mitzvah to answer up what the problem is between these two. So how do we understand that? So it seems that the answer is this, the principle that we seem to associate with the idea of humility, that it's not enough to be, it's not so difficult to be humble if you think that you're nothing. Rather, the idea of humility is to recognize you are a Balkoma, recognize that you have stature, and yet also be able to be humble in comparison to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. To put those are two, and the way he says, it's Eilu Nipsish Balkoma V'anav Himashneit Stadim Shal Osa Matbeya. What does that mean? Excuse me. Shneit Stadim, two sides, Shal Osa Matbeya, of that coin, of the same coin. Two sides of the same coin. To be humble on one hand, but to also recognize the strengths that you have On the other hand, in order to be able to fulfill all your personal potential, even though one is still going to be humble, Keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He adds in here, yeah?
That's where Noah fell short. Right? Noah he was humble, but he didn't have any self-confidence.
Okay.
He didn't try to...
Okay, I never thought of Noah as the humble issue, but okay, as humility, self-confidence issue.
He was complete tzaddik, but he was not... He wasn't a leader. He was not.
Right. I always thought of Noah in a different way. But okay. I hear.
What is the wealthy part of it?
Why does a person need to be wealthy?
Yeah. He can't be referring to gashmi's wealth, material wealth.
Well, Izuhu Asher Asameach B'chalko, not wanting. Maybe that's what it's referring to. Okay, so he goes on to quote, and we'll get back to something in the middle that he mentions. A sichas musar mi pi Rav Hagaon Rav Reuven Feinstein beveis medrash to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. So what does that mean? Yeshivas Elchanan is YU, that's where I went. And I forget if it's Tuesday or Wednesday night now. I think it was every Tuesday night. Maybe it's every Wednesday night. Gosh, it's been a couple of years since I left yeshiva. But every one night during the week, Tuesday or Wednesday night, they would always have a sichas musar. They would have somebody, one of the rabbanim in the yeshiva, would come and give a 20-minute towards the end of the night seder. And every once in a while, they'd have a guest. And in Tavshin Samach Tes, which is what year? That's 10 years ago. We're in Tavshin Ayin Tes. Wow, that's after I left yeshiva already. No wonder I don't remember it. Apparently, Rav Reuven Feinstein came and gave the Sichas Musar. So he said there's Adam Sheish Lo Kochas Gedolim Velo Hishtamish Behem Kol Tzorchan, that people who have great kochos that don't necessarily fulfill the things that they do, even though they might accomplish more than their friends, but their friends fulfilled all of their kochos. Their friend fulfilled all of their potential, right? That lo yigi l'mayla, they're not going to reach the mila of their friend. I mean, the friend who reached all their potential isn't where they're at. They had higher potential. Anusanuso shel Moshe. That was the humility of Moshe. Kei yudei sheyesh kochos nishkavim v'hayim isyari. That he knew that he had great kochos, and he was nervous that he was not going to be able to fulfill them. He suggested that perhaps is the what is the humility of Gedolei Yisrael, that they recognize that they have greatness, and therefore they have the ability to be humble because, listen, if they had the same potential that I had, so I'd also be able to accomplish... they'd also be able to accomplish what I have. I mean, they realize that the only reason that they've accomplished what they have is because Hashem gave them certain powers, certain strengths. So, okay, so why would I be arrogant? It's all because Hashem gave me what I have that I have the ability to be able to accomplish them. If they had that ability, they would also be able to accomplish what... those things as well. I think we've told the story of Aaron Cutler, that he once went into the Lakewood Beis Medrash, and there was a guy who was struggling on a piece of Gemara, just trying to understand how to read it, and Aaron Cutler said, oh, halavai, I would have the opportunity to struggle on a Gemara. He never even had to struggle. He was always just so clear and easy to him, and he missed that opportunity of being able to have to work very hard and able to do those things. So we have to, right, in order for a person to be humble, they have to be able to recognize the power that they have. There's a famous Gemara Masechta Sota, because it almost sounds like a joke, where Rav Yosef said, the Gemara there discusses a bunch of character traits, and when these people passed away, so that there was nobody who could exemplify that character trait anymore. Perhaps the most famous one, because it sounds so backwards, is Rav Yosef. That Rav Yosef says, one of the Tanai left the world, so Anivus, humility, left, and comes Rav Yosef and says, what are you talking about? There's still humility in the world. There's me, right? Mm-hmm. So how could he possibly be saying that? So certainly Rav Yosef realized who he was. But there is a Gemara at the end of Maseches Horios that has a discussion about who should be the next Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa. The two candidates were Rava and Rav Yosef. And Rav Yosef is described as a Sinai, and Rava was described as an Oker Harim. What does it mean to be a Sinai versus an Oker Harim? So a Sinai is somebody who's like halachic. I mean, he knows everything. He's just he's able to repeat things, as opposed to an Oker Harim being able to remove mountains, is somebody who's a big Baal Pilpul, somebody who can create analytical skills and be able to. So that was the conflict. Who's better to have as Rosh Hashiva as the head? The person who is the the encyclopedic knower of halacha versus the one who can come up with all of these logical twists and turns and things like that. So the Gemara records that the question was sent to Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael, they came back and said, you should hire the Sinai, because the Sinai is, because everybody needs to buy wheat. Doesn't mean everyone needs to buy wheat. That's the main sustenance that people need to get. Nevertheless, the Gemara, the Rav Yosef rejected it. Said, no, I want Rabba to be it. Rav Yosef had his cheshbon. The Gemara seemed to conflict as to what exactly his cheshbon was. But Rav Yosef gave up on it. So Rav Yosef clearly knew who he was. He knew he was a Sinai. He knew that he turned down the job to be Rosh Hashiva of Pumbedisa until later on when he served as Rosh Hashiva for a couple of years after Rabba had passed away. But yet he still recognizes being the Anav because he recognized that everything comes from Kadosh Baruch Hu. There is a piece from Rabbi, I heard a shir once from Rabbi Friend. I'm not sure it's in print anywhere, but I remember listening to this Rabbi Friend. I thought it was very powerful. That Rabbi Yosef had a very interesting life, a couple of different episodes over the course of his life. And if you see over the course of the Gemara, so Rabbi Yosef, there's somewhat often, they quote something in the name of Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef's like, I don't remember saying that. Or there's a halacha that was taught, and Rabbi Yosef's like, I don't remember that. And Abai then goes into why what happened. So the Gemara tells us that at some point during his life, he went blind. And blind wasn't just mean that he lost his eyesight, he also lost his memory. His entire memory was wiped out, and he had to learn everything again from scratch. Now it seems that these episodes came later in life, so I'm not sure how exactly this worked. The episode of him being elected Rosh Hashiva was at the very end of his life. So either he was acting as Rosh Hashiva as being blind, which is not impossible. There was a Rosh Hashiva of Neri Yisrael for a couple of years who was effectively unable to see. Felder was effectively unable to see towards the end of his life, unable to really learn. So it's not impossible. So that's one thing. But Rabbi Friend pointed out that what does it mean to be an unav? For a person to be humble, they just recognize they could lose everything that they have at one time. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to, whatever they've been able to accomplish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to take it away. So Rav Yosef says, don't think there's no anivus in the world because there's ana, there's me, right? I know what it's like. I know what it means for a person to be able to attain greatness and be able to lose it all at one point. And then he was able to go ahead and grow back. But that's why Rav Yosef is the paradigmatic person who is humble. So, but what does that have to do with the nevuah? Why is that a necessity in order to be able to achieve? Or, why does that distinguish Moshe from everybody else? So, there is a Gemara in Maseches Chulin that says, "Godol Mashenemar b'Moshe v'Aaron, Yosher Mashenemar b'Avram." That Moshe was considered great. Now, it puts Moshe and Aaron together, which is a little problematic for this. But Moshe and Aaron were greater than Avram. In what way? Because by Avram, when Avram was having a discussion with Hashem, he was saying, "Banochi afar ve'efer, I'm like dust and ashes. I'm nothing." By Moshe, it says, "V'nachnuma." That in the discussion having to do with the man that came down in Parshas Beshalach, they say we're nothing. So what's the difference? So Rashi says, you see, when you're dust and ashes, at least you're something. You're dust and ashes. Moshe was saying that we're nothing. So what does that mean? What is that terminology? What does it have to do with anything? So of course there is the famous story they tell. Whether it's true or not true doesn't matter, but it describes the Yeshiva of Navardik, where they seem to have these practices of trying to afflict themselves and work on themselves and make themselves feel as if they're nothing. And the story goes that a young man who just came into yeshiva walks into yeshiva and he sees everybody is like sitting there saying to themselves, I am nothing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. And the guy says, oh, I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. So he sits down and starts saying the same thing, I'm nothing, I'm nothing, to which one guy says to the other, how lucky he thinks he's nothing, right? He just got here, he already thinks he's nothing, right? So is that what's going on over the course of this Gemara? That, Moshe said, I'm less than dust. So he brings here so the Ksav Sofer says, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. That when a person says, I'm like dust and ashes, Avram could have been saying, I'm dust and ashes compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But compared to all the rest of the people, they're less than dust and ashes. They're half a dust and ashes. I mean, I could still be the biggest piece of dust of all the other people around. Moshe was saying that, no, I am the equivalent of everybody else, which perhaps demonstrates a greater level of anivas that Moshe had than them. And then he goes and quotes from Rav Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum. Who's Rav Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum? Anybody know? Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum, extra. So very good. You're wrong though, but you're supposed to say that. That's correct. Rav Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum was the Segedar Rav. He was the older brother of Rav Moshe Teitelbaum. Who's Rav Moshe Teitelbaum? So he became the Satma Rav. He was the Satma Rav after Rav Yoel Teitelbaum. Rav Yoel Teitelbaum passed away in the, I think, late 60s or maybe mid-70s. I think he had a stroke, I think, in the late 60s, and the mid-70s is when he passed away. There's a whole episode, if one wants to recommend this book again, if one ever wants to know about the hack concerning the Hasidisha dynasties in America, you can read this book. Fascinating. It's got a major chapter on Satmar. During that period, the wife of the Satmar Rav, Rav Yoel's wife, sort of ran things to a large extent, even to the point that she spoke sometimes in front of men. Yes, it's a pretty wild thing. Who will lead us? Again, my favorite chapter is the first one about the Munkacher Rebbe. Of course, I'm partial, because that's my family. But anyways, it's a fascinating story. But they were Hungarian, maybe. I'm not sure nowadays where it fits in. What? Yeah, no, they were definitely both Hungarian. Munkacs and Satmar were relatively close to one another. They were somewhat rivals of one another. But that was only Satmar was actually smaller than Seagate. Seagate was the larger community, which is where the Teitelbaum family goes through. That's sort of the original dynasty. Rav Chaim Tzvi was Rav Yoel Teitelbaum's older brother. So Rav Chaim Tzvi took over for his father, and Rav Yoel felt that he, in a way, deserved whatever. He went and found something else. And Rav Chaim Tzvi passed away when he was relatively young. He passed away in the 20s as the Rav of Seagate. But he, because he was somewhat weak, that means power bores a vacuum. So the other people in town were sort of more powerful, and they wanted Rav Chaim Tzvi's son to become the next Rebbe, because they figured, felt that they could control him more. They knew if Rav Yoel Teitelbaum would come in, so there would be a fight. So Rav Yoel Teitelbaum didn't get that, instead went to Satmar with the vision and the motivation to make Satmar bigger than Seagate. So
Satmar in English is St. Mary's?
So that's a myth. I'm not sure that that's actually true. That there is a... Google it and see. There's a whole discussion about whether that in fact is true or not.
What does St. Mary's have to do with
it? The town Satmar comes from the term St. Mary's. But I believe it's a bit of a dispute whether that is correct or not. But anyways, Rav Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum, by the way, Rav Yoel Teitelbaum also didn't have any children. So Rav Moshe Teitelbaum was the son of Rav Chaim Teitelbaum. Rav Moshe Teitelbaum is sort of the one who really led to, the major growth of the Tzatmer that we see. And his two children are the ones that are the two heads right now, of the two different Tzatmer communities. But anyways, Rav Chaim Tzvi Teitelbaum points this out with regards to Moshe, what was the difference between Moshe and everybody else? That Moshe can have a conversation with a Kaddish Baruch. Now, most Nevi'im, in order to have their Nevu'ah, had to sort of lower themselves, that I'm here, and I'm going to sort of subject myself, recognize that I'm nothing compared to Hashem, and therefore be able to receive my nevuah. But what does that mean? That when they were getting their nevuah, they weren't really themselves, right? They were sort of like, I'm working on myself for now in order to get that nevuah. Moshe was himself. Moshe was able to receive the nevuah as himself, and that's why Moshe was able to have conversations with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. So in fact, the implication of that is, that pasuk where it says Moshe was a Nav Ma'od, it's not just a throwaway line that, oh, by the way, Moshe was like this. That was the reason for his different level of nevuah. Right, the cause of his different level of nevuah was that he saw himself, that he was extremely, extremely humble. So that his son, Rav Moshe Teitelbaum, in his sefer, explains that the pasuk says, "V'lo kam navi od bi Yisrael kemoshe," that there will not be another navi amongst Yisrael like Moshe. So that sentence is a little backwards. That's the way it's normally phrased, but it's a little backwards, right? Lo od bi Yisrael navi gadol kemoshe. So as he says, this is no lo kam navi od bi Yisrael amongst Yisrael like Moshe, because Moshe saw himself as one of the guys. Moshe saw himself as no greater than any as subjectively no greater than any other of the, than any other of the Jewish people. He happens to be that he was given tremendous kochos, he was given tremendous strength, but it doesn't make him greater. He didn't see himself as being greater than anybody else, which is why Moshe was able to maintain his relationship, and perhaps explains why Moshe was on a different level vis-a-vis the rest of the people, and why he was necessary in order to get Bnei Yisrael out. That Moshe saw himself as being amongst the Jews, and therefore he was also, I'm just like them. And if he could say, I'm just like them, and be worthy of being taken out of Egypt, so Hashem said, all right, so Moshe's like other people as well, and therefore I'll take him out of Egypt with Moshe being their leader. We have 2 minutes left. Throw in one more Dvar Torah from the end of the parak. I like this piece here because he brings in modern idea, very relevant to the Zman as Shemen HaTov al Chavushi Chamishtor, so Chelik Dalad. So he points out the following idea. There is a very cryptic pasuk towards the end of the parak where Moshe makes his tefillin, pasuk Yud Gimel, Kel No Rafan Allah. Hashem says to Moshe, "Va'via Yerok Yerak B'Fanel Lo Tekalim Shivas Yamin." Where father spit in her face, would she not be humiliated and have to last for 7 days? Let her be outside because she spit in my face, so to speak. And that's the way Rashi seems to interpret it. Rashi says that that because she. Where is it here? To that she embarrassed the Shechina, so therefore she should be out for 14 days, but rather she's not, she's only going to be out for 7 days. Implication being that she didn't actually get Saras. That Moshe's tefillah, we had this problem the other day, but was Moshe's tefillah accepted, was it not accepted? Moshe's tefillah was accepted, she didn't get Saras, but yet she still had to leave in humiliation for a couple of days. But what is this relevancy? I mean, Hashem says, I'm going to send her out for 7, even though by me it should be at least 14, right? But if she would humiliate her, a father would humiliate her for 7 days, for me it would be 14 days. What is that cheshbon that's going on here? So he suggests that there are two sins, there are two issues that Miriam had. Number one is that the Lashon Hara issue, right, talking about Moshe in a somewhat disparaging way, however we understand that. The second issue is that she didn't understand levels. She didn't understand relevancies. It was a problem of recognizing that even though some things are appear to be the same, there could be extremely, there are vastly different levels to them. And therefore, a father versus a Kaddish Baruch Hu, recognizing that there is a distinction between them, that is the message that Moshe is giving over in this last pasuk. That I should say that even though I'm 14, I'm going to be for 7, and recognizes a humiliation of the father versus humiliation of me, and recognize that there's such a thing as being different levels. So he adds in here a paragraph at the end. This is the MS, Inyan Maki bi Yosef Yashayat Lavarim Ram Shiv Shalafratam, about Misha Anot Pekuchos Yiridachit Shel Hashava, Lahashos Zom Shalashayat Lahashos. That this is relevant to many different things, you can't count them all, but the issue of relevancy is a sin that is still relevant, right? But Dugma Lakach, the example is, he's writing this in the, how long ago was this? Tufshin Samach Gimel. Okay, so 15 years ago, this is already after he retired, but example of this is Umashiratsu Hashachorim Vakushim of Medina America, African Americans in this country, Lishtamish Pamilas Hashua, to use the term Holocaust, to talk about the challenges that they had in America. And there they attempt to use the terminology of the Jewish people where 6 million people were killed. And you can't compare the two. And the same thing that they use the terminology that Hamas and the Palestinians use this terminology, where they use the term of Kiddush Hashem, that we're dying to sanctify. Right? It's not the same thing. Right? A Jew dying al Kiddush Hashem is not the same as these guys jumping in and saying, "Oh, I'm going to die al Kiddush Hashem." And it's important to recognize the different levels and the different not. not everything, and to use the terminology from one place to the next, even though they are, even then they're not the same. He even adds in one line at the end. So to a, like a young rabbi who sits with the rest, and he's called Rosh Hashiva, but he sits amongst Gedolim, right? So you have to recognize that people are, not everybody who's called rabbi is necessarily the same, not everybody who's called Rosh Hashiva is necessarily the same. Not every time they use the term Holocaust is the same. And one has to be very careful with regards to their language, not to draw equivalencies when they really aren't there. All right, stop here. Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos. Lukács is now in the Ukraine.